We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is the High Stakes Lowdown, a RotoViz podcast brought to you by the Fantasy Football Players Championship. I'm Eric Balkman from the High Stakes Fantasy Football Hour and the FFPC. You can follow me on Twitter at Eric Balkman and the FFPC on Twitter at FFPC. This week, I'm sending some questions the way of Diplab Mandel, a winner of dozens of FFPC main event, Football Guys Players Championship, and High Stakes Dynasty Leagues. Currently, he has three teams in the top 40 overall in the 3,000-team FFPC main event, a contest that features a $4 million prize pool with a $500,000 grand prize going to first place. In this episode, we discuss the Bears running back situation without David Montgomery, how valuable David Njoku is in tight end premium leagues like the FFPC, and of course, much more. Before we get into the show, I want to remind everyone that you can get a listeners-only 10% discount to RotoViz by using the code RVRadio2021. That's RVRadio2021. Your subscription gives you unlimited access to all of the RotoViz content and tools, and it supports the podcast channel. Now, without further ado, here is a winner of dozens of high-stakes leagues over the course of his long career, Diplab Mandel. Diplab Mandel rejoining me on the road of his high stakes lowdown this week. Diplab, a winner of numerous main event leagues, Football Guys Players Championship leagues. I just noticed today, Diplab, that you are in second place in the Bare Knuckle Challenge with your co-manager, Vince Staffolino. And I feel like LeBron James now. Not one, not two, not three. It is three. Three teams in the top 40 in the FFPC main event right now. You're off to a great start, man. Congrats.
Thanks, Balky. Yeah, it's always good to start hot. I just hope I can keep up the pace when it matters, when the money round starts.
It's always better to start off hot than cold, for sure. But you definitely have won a lot of leagues before. You know what it takes, and I think people are going to be excited to hear what you have to say this week here. And congratulations not only on that fast start, but in the main event, but in all your leagues so far. Specifically talking about the team you have in 14th place right now in the main event, one of the guys that's helped got you into that position has been DeAndre Swift. Now, there's been, you know, basically ever since drafting season, the anti-Swifters, or the anti-Swifties, as it were, out there, they were concerned with the presence of Jamal Williams. They were concerned about the new offense, the new head coach there. He's alleviated a lot of those concerns. However, Jamal Williams is not going anywhere, and now the Lions just lost their Pro Bowl center, Frank Ragnow, with a toe injury for the remainder of the 2021 season. With a team that's loaded like yours, are you starting to have concerns about him being an every week start for you?
I'm actually not concerned about him being every week starter, Balky. I think you and I have had this conversation in the past where I'm a very big value holder, value drafter, you know, buy low, sell high, that kind of stuff. And Swift falling in main event drafts due to the FUD during preseason helped me grab him sometimes late third, early fourth. I believe in his talent. I think the only concern would be if Swift gets hurt. Just today, I was checking the snap counts, and if you go back and check that, last 2 weeks, Swift has actually played 70% of the snap counts, and he started more at the 50% levels, right? So his snap counts have gone up. The other interesting thing with him, if you notice, is he's already caught 29 passes. You know, that puts him on a pace to catch more than 90 passes. So with Ragnow getting hurt, I would be more concerned about running the ball, but you know that team is trash right now and they need to pass a lot and Swift will continue playing. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, the main thumper or the bigger back is Jamal Williams, but Swift is more versatile and I see him catching passes still in that offense. You know, they don't have a lot of wide receivers.
Yeah, they really don't. And Hockenson has kind of been, you know, as long as we're talking about the Lions. So, and I don't think, do we have a question on TJ? Oh, yeah, we'll get to TJ Hockenson a little bit later because I do want to pick your brain about him. So we'll save it for now. Let's get to Brandon Ayuk. This is another player in the 14th place FFPC main event team that you have. How many times has, you know, he crept into your lineup as a second flex given his weird workload and his weird start to the 2021 season? And based on what we've seen from him so far, BipLab, should we just expect this to continue, or do you expect Ayuk to turn it on and really you know, be a fantasy asset down the stretch, much like he was in 2020?
Yeah, I think the only time I would have played Ayuk on this team would have been week one, and he laid a goose egg, I think, that week. And then since the team was loaded, I didn't have to probably start him in week two or week three. I have to go back and look at that. But you know, looking at that team, their coach, Kyle Shanahan, you know, I think one of the things I like about Kyle Shanahan is he's probably one of the more honest coaches in the league, right? Than his buddy on the other side on the Rams team, you know, who lies all the time. And for some reason, it seems like Ayuk ticked him off preseason. I don't know what it is, but he seems still to be on in a doghouse and you know, going through this sophomore slump. What's concerning to me is even with Kittle hurt, I didn't see much involvement of Ayuk in that offense. I think they've built it around Debo. Debo's breaking off. So even though Ayuk is playing 70% plus snaps, is not getting targeted. And now they also have Trey Lance, whom they're trying to get him going. So I'm not going to play him at flex at all until I see a breakout game. Even for bye weeks, I'm probably finding some rental flex options from the waiver wire.
Yeah, and I think that's the way you got to play it right now too. Certainly not worth cutting yet, but this is a guy that is not going to be helping anybody get to $500,000 the way that he's performing right now. You mentioned the Trey Lance variable in there as well. So certainly something to watch going forward, but watching with Ayuk on your bench seems to be the way to go.
Yeah, but he could be that you know, diamond in the rough when it comes to playoff.
If oh, yeah.
He gets hurt and Kittle is out. You know, that's why I wouldn't cut him at all, because the upside is huge, but I'll just hold him, you know, in the bench.
I think you're right. And I don't own him in a ton of spots. It was weird because, you know, I was doing all these preseason podcasts and I was like, man, I really, you know, after talking to all these high stakes players, I'm like, I don't have enough Ayuk this year. And then I was talking, you know, I talking to these guys and now I'm kind of thankful that I don't, you know, like I'm thankful that of all the Debo Samuel teams I have, which isn't a ton, but I'm not willing to give up the ghost on Ayuk yet, but it's not looking great right now, but he could come on at the end of the season. The Raiders. Oh my goodness. What a story we could talk about with them right now. So let's just keep it on fantasy terms. John Gruden steps down. You will obviously be starting Darren Waller. Are there any other players in Las Vegas that you're particularly high on? Rich Bisaccia, I think Bisaccia. He is taking, I'm terrible with names. He is taking over the head coaching duties for the Raiders. Who do you like there going forward on that team? Are you changing any of the player evaluations for any of those Raiders now with somebody else as the head man there?
I think for this week, you know, it will be a big emotional toll on that team. So I'll be curious to see how they play, how they bounce back, and what they do. Of course, Darren Waller is an every week starter. I think Josh Jacobs is still RB2 because of the volume and a player I will play. I'm not high on him, but I'm going to play if I have him. But other than that, I don't think, you know, I'm going to use a lot of Raiders anymore. But I wasn't using them at all either in the beginning of the season. You know, I'm a huge Bryan Edwards fan. You know about it. You know, I have him in most dynasties. I aggressively drafted him in most redrafts. I still believe in his talent and you know, he's flashed well, but he's still, you know, not a reliable week-to-week starter, right? So, and in fact, Ruggs is probably more fantasy relevant right now. But I'm going to try avoiding playing Ruggs or Bryan Edwards where I can and more roll with Waller and some Josh Jacobs right now until I see where this offense goes. I expect it to be similar because they've not made any changes there. I think they were smart to promote their special teams coach and not load up the offensive coordinator. Maybe the message to him is keep doing what you're doing. But it'll be interesting to see how that team plays post Gruden.
Yeah, and I gotta believe that, you know, it's just so weird to see the Bears take it to the Raiders, a team that's been so good this year. You gotta wonder if that was playing on the Raiders' minds, you know, and just and maybe now that, not that it's over and done with, but that Gruden is out, they don't have to answer questions about him anymore because he's not part of the team. And maybe that does help them going forward to really increase the fantasy production. I know for my Bryan Edwards and Josh Jacobs teams, I will be rooting for that wholeheartedly. Khalil Herbert was a guy that a lot of people picked up last week, maybe 2 weeks ago. And I was actually surprised. I mean, I'm still high on Damian Williams. I know he's banged up right now, but what do you get? Herbert had like 18 carries, almost 20 carries. And that really helped the Bears beat the Raiders that game. You're just driving down the field with Khalil Herbert pummeling that defensive front. How likely is it that he actually is the Bears running back to start over Damian Williams until David Montgomery's healthy again, Biplab?
Yep. I typically don't like how Chicago is coached and their game plans. You know, I'm not a Matt Nagy believer and he does all kinds of weird things. I did like Herbert as a late dynasty pick. You know, there were a lot of those late running backs this year I liked in dynasties, and it's good to see some of them getting chances now. Herbert, Chris Evans, you know, players like that. But that being said, you know, for example, they are still holding back Justin Fields. I don't think they've opened up the full playbook for him, and it baffles me, you know, in a wide open NFC North, why Nagy is not doing that. So all that considered, I do feel they will be in a 50-50 split, you know, until Montgomery comes back. I think Damian Williams, because of his experience, pass protection, you know, he'll still be the first choice for that offense, and Herbert's role will increase, but it'll be 50-50, and Damian Williams is probably the goal line back, at least for next 1 or 2 weeks.
So what would you do as far as starting him?
I'm not going to start him unless I'm desperate. Again, I'm going to watch this week and see how it goes and probably form an opinion after that. Because if you look at the stats last week, it was 50-50, but Williams played early in the game, got the goal line touch. You know, it's hard to make a decision that Herbert is a starter based on that.
Okay, is Williams still startable for you, though, week six?
I will start Williams, yes. Okay. I will still start Williams, primarily because I feel he can get the touchdown. So between the two, I feel the probability of touchdown is with Williams, and that's why I'll start him over Herbert.
Yeah, and that game, that's obviously a home game for the Bears this week as they take on my glorious Green Bay Packers. 44.5 is the total on that one, and the Packers are a 4.5-point favorite. And I'll tell you this, Biplab. Well, I mean, you're a Vikings fan. You know that sometimes the Packers defense has a way of making young, unproven or, well, young and unproven players like Justin Fields could make them look really good. And this could be an underrated game for the Bears, too. Everywhere I have Damian Williams, and maybe this is more of a commentary on how, you know, weak my running back depth is on some of my teams, but I'm starting him everywhere, man. Just like you, I can't, he's too valuable.
I think the Bears defense is playing well. I think Packers will win the game, but I feel Bears will cover the spread.
For sure. It's tough for me to get around that. I think that's it's going to be a tight game. Probably not unlike what we saw with the Packers and Bengals in week five. Okay. So tight ends, let's talk about them. New England has been an interesting tight end landscape ever since Gronk and Aaron Hernandez left. They get the Devin Asiasi and Dalton Kuechly as rookies last year. Didn't really work out. Bill Belichick goes out. He signs Jonnu Smith and Hunter Henry. Now, with those two players there, it looked, and high-stakes players drafted Jonnu Smith basically as the guy. He has not been the guy. And the last couple of weeks, Hunter Henry has clearly been the guy. Is he the guy going forward now for the Patriots at tight end for the leagues that you own these guys in BitLab? Is Hunter Henry officially the tight end that you want to roll with in FFPC leagues now?
Yep. Hunter Henry, I think, is the fantasy relevant tight end there. You know, the funny thing I'll share with you is John Terry and I have a preseason bet on who the tight end with most fantasy points on this team would be. I think we bet on a Football Guys team, and I bet Hunter Henry. He was all on Jonnu Smith. He's not feeling well right now, I can tell you. But I think Jonnu is the better overall packaged football player, right? He does it all, better blocker, and a bunch of those things. But I think all Hunter Henry does is catch passes, and we are seeing that evolve over the last few games, right? So right now, for me, I'll be starting Hunter Henry everywhere. In fact, he's my top five tight end this week. And then Jonnu Smith is probably going to be on my bench and more of a desperation play.
Yeah, I don't know. First of all, are all your waivers at BitLab?
Yeah, okay. That's why we had to do it at 9
o'clock. I kind of figured that was reason. So all of mine are not in yet, but obviously in the KFFSC, I get till midnight Eastern to do theirs, and most of them are done. Yep. But I did put in for Jonnu Smith on a couple of teams where I am desperate. I was shocked how many Goddard Gronkowski teams I have, you know, where I'm carrying the two tight ends and I can't obviously play either one this week. Yeah. And so Jonnu Smith is a guy that I did put some bids on. We'll see what happens there, but I do like Hunter Henry going forward. I think that, the target volume for him, continues to be right where you want it to be with tight end being such a shallow position. Hunter Henry could be definitely a diamond in the rough this week.
Yeah,
for sure. All right, so let's move on here and talk a little bit about another tight end, and that's David Njoku. Now, by the time people are listening to this podcast, Bip, the waiver deadline it will have already passed. You can feel free to spill your guts here and let us know how you handled David Njoku on the waiver wire in the leagues he was available at, for you in the FFPC this week.
Sure. Yeah. You know, I mean, I would love to see David Njoku succeed at NFL level. You know, I liked him out of college and I sincerely hope his career is finally taking over. But, you know, if you look at the Cleveland offense, and this has been for the last 2 years, Baker Mayfield loves spreading the ball, right? And they are a run first offense. And so, you know, it's hard for me to trust Njoku week over week, you know, given that even Austin Hooper and Harrison Bryant are on that team. So he's not my top choice tight end from waiver. I would rather go and get, you know, Ricky Seals-Jones over him, or I would even do Mo Alie-Cox this week. You know, they have a better matchup in my opinion. Plus for Cleveland, you know, Landry is coming back soon. So I'm just not sure if Njoku is going to have a similar game on a consistent basis going forward.
I think you're right. I also think that there are going to be a bunch of people who are maybe like me starting him this week. Kyle Pitts too is on bye. George Kittle obviously on IR, and his team's on a bye. So anybody who picked up Ross Dwelly, not going to be able to use him this week. So it could be go time for, and you think about how many tight ends are already owned in FFPC leagues. Like it's scraps out there, and there could be some people that are, you know, a wing and a prayer starting David Njoku this week. I hope I'm not one of them, but we shall see if it pays dividends or not. In that same division, that AFC North division, I want to just read a statement to you, and you feel free to agree or disagree or strongly agree. Here it is. Deontay Johnson and Chase Claypool are every week starts with Juju Smith-Schuster out for the year. Agree or disagree, BipLab?
Deontay Johnson, yes, and he was always
right.
Pre or post injury. Claypool, my answer is it depends. For example, you know, I'm going to play Antonio Brown or a Devante Smith over Claypool. I might play Claypool more when Pittsburgh have home games, and I will also look at the pass rush or what kind of defense the opposition have, because my worry is Big Ben and his protection and his ability to, you know, throw the ball down the ground. And so that's where I'm still not sure if I can trust Claypool week to week basis. But that being said, this week they get Seattle at home. No Russell Wilson. I'm going to play Claypool everywhere because he may have a huge game at home. So that's how I look at both Deontay and Claypool.
It almost kind of clears up a muddled situation a little bit, you know, because HSFFO or co-host Farrell Elliott, I don't know if there's a bigger Chase Claypool fan out there than him. And I know he'll be rolling him out there every single week. And certainly he's a dynamic talent. The question is, can Ben Roethlisberger keep his body together all season long to continue to pump the ball downfield to Claypool accurately, you know? And with Johnson, I don't necessarily worry about it. Although if you look at the last 2 weeks, the biggest production that Johnson's had has been on that deep ball, not Claypool, but it's been on Johnson getting that deep ball.
You are right. And, you know, I'm actually a huge Claypool fan. You look at most of my dynasties, you'll find Claypool on the roster. The way the Steelers are playing, I just don't know if I can confidently start him. You know, now I'm definitely playing him over lots of players, but the names I said, like you know, Antonio Brown, if you look at that, too many mouths to feed even at Tampa, but I'm more confident starting Antonio Brown than Chase Claypool.
Just curiously, Antonio Brown, is he an every week start right now?
For me, yes.
Yeah.
I don't know how others feel, but for me, yes. I think Brady loves him. There is a chemistry there, and you know, I am going to start him every week. Yep.
I was super high on him in the, you know, if you looked at his, when he came aboard in Tampa last year, and this is why the Brown thing hasn't really necessarily surprised me. When he came aboard in Tampa last year, Brady was targeting him a ton. Like not only did he stump for the guy, you know, Aaron Rodgers stumped for Randall Cobb.
Yeah.
But it's not like Cobb's lighting it up right now. When Brown came, and I know that's not a fair comparison between the two, but when Brown came aboard in Tampa, he got a ton of targets. He's continuing to get a ton of targets, and nobody's really had much of an answer outside of the Rams for that Buccaneers offense. Like it's totally lit. It's totally fire, as the kids say. And I'm reaping the benefits of playing Brown in a lot of leagues, as are you, BipLab. Speaking of those Buccaneers, how hard, with the bye week gauntlet upon us, a lot of players going on IR this week, how hard do high stakes players need to work in order to ensure themselves that Giovanni Bernard will not be cut with the roster churn, you know, about to get to a season high right now, to make sure that they keep him on their roster for the potential, you know, high ceiling that could present itself if Jones or Fournette or both were to go down.
Yeah, no, and I think Jones is garbage, right? I mean, if you look at some of the clips where Brady got sacked and Jones looked clueless, where did that rush come from? I think Brady is probably going to end his young career, you know, with exposing all the flaws Jones has. Right now, Fournette seems to have the the running game under his belt. You know, he's their number one rusher right now. But I like Giovanni Bernard as a pass catching flex option. You know, Brady always liked players like James White, right? And when they later in the season, you know, when everyone's making a playoff push and Tampa is more playing plus 500 teams, I think, or close games, you know, I think Bernard would be seeing a lot more snaps. And you know, all we want is five or six catches and,
right.
and a touchdown sprinkled in, and that makes him a flex. So he is a flex option, especially in close games that would come down the road. For now, I'll stash him on the bench, and if I don't have any option, I'm rolling Bernard.
I have one team where I drafted in Kentucky, where I ended up I wasn't trying to. I just ended up going heavy on the Bucs. Like, I have Godwin and Antonio Brown and Gronk and Brady. And then on a whim, I'm like, you know what? Let's go crazy with the Buccaneers. So I got Bernard there too. And he might end up being a starter for me. You know, I don't know how bad the roster churn is going to be for me in week 7 or 8 or 9 or anything like that. He could be, I don't think that it would necessarily be terrible. Again, if he is catching 4, 5, 6 balls, that might be enough. Especially if that Buccaneers offense keeps cranking out a lot of production. Now let's get to the Hockenson question here. He's obviously not fully healthy. It's affected him the last couple of weeks. I think like 5 or 6 targets, 4 or 5 catches for him in weeks 4 and 5 combined. Have you thought about benching him at all, given his performance so far and knowing that he is playing hurt? Has that entered your mind, or have you actually benched him at all?
No, I've not benched him at all. And, you know, I'm not yet worried. Even last week, right, he played 80% of the snaps, you know, because one thing I rely on Balky in these high stakes is look at player snaps, what's happened and all that stuff, right? So he played 80% snaps. Now, the issue is that, you know, the Lions just had to have a brutal schedule, right? And they had 2 brutal division games also to go through, right? So that could have impacted, you know, the production. But again, they don't have receivers. All they have is, you know, these running backs and someone like Hockenson, right? Hopefully with Tyrell Williams coming back from IR, that may help open up Hockenson more and be in a pass-catching mode. But for me, if he's healthy and playing, I'm starting him. I think a touchdown is coming probably this week versus Cincinnati. And hey, they are at home. Maybe this is an upset alert with a 50% or a 50-50 Joe Burrow. And maybe the Lions get a home win this weekend.
Yeah, Bengals only basically 3.5-point favorites in that game, total at 47.5. It is very, very tough in the FFPC to have a guy with Hockenson's talent, a guy that you drafted, you know, invested so much draft capital in, to sit. You know, for me, I'm just kind of like, if I draft a guy that high and he's active, and by the way, Allen Robinson is testing this because,
yes.
You know, he's the guy right now that I finally broke down BipLab and I finally sat him in some leagues last week, and like, I can't put up with this anymore. You know, he's got to start performing. Hockenson's not there yet. And if I played in the FFPC, I think I'd give him a few more weeks given his upside. You know, I have a guy like, look what Mark Andrews did on Monday night, you know, and Hockenson is capable of something like that, you know, and can you imagine having that on your bench? I can't. And that's why I'm going to continue rolling.
Andrews had a slow start. If you look at it, this was the game he gets going. And, you know, the thing with Robinson, though, is you always have more options at receivers. Like last week, I actually played Michael Pittman and Jalen Waddle. The Waddle thing didn't work out, but over Allen Robinson in a bunch of leagues, you know. And I think with Justin Fields' deep ball ability, I think Darnell Mooney is someone I'm hoping will break out and have some of those monster games down the road.
Hey, speaking of Monday night, how did that game was obviously one of the most fantastic games of the season. Did it flip any fantasy games for you, any matchups? Did it vault you up the standings with any of your teams?
Yeah, that was an incredible game. And you know, obviously it ended up being favorable for me from a fantasy perspective, right? Because I have a lot of shares of Marquise Brown and, you know, one of my top 40 teams is built around Marquise Brown and Deebo Samuel, because, you know, those were late receivers that I nailed. And then, you know, obviously Andrews with his 47 points and, right. and Lamar Jackson really, really helped. Although it broke my heart in a main event versus Glenn Lowy. You know, we are both in playoff contention. Is I think we needed 4 or 5 points from Justin Tucker that night.
Oh.
Can you imagine going into Monday night and thinking Justin Tucker cannot score 4 points?
Right.
And I think we lost that by 2, to the extent I was like, take it to OT, kick a field goal, you know, stop them.
And then the way it was going, I mean, like, as far as I was concerned, like, and this is what was driving me nuts about that Packers game. And it seemed like both teams were playing for the field goal and in overtime. And the Ravens, I'd say what you will about John Harbaugh, that dude does not play for field goals. And the way that the Ravens were moving the ball down the field, you just kind of knew.
Lamar got hot in fourth quarter. I think Colts lost their mind. You cannot lose that game, you know, in my opinion. For example, I don't know why Colts were not running the ball a lot and they were making Carson Wentz throw, you know, in some critical situations. They could have finished that game off. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just so crazy. 31 points for the Ravens, and on each and every one of their touchdowns that they scored, never attempted one extra point. Just that's fantasy, man. That is fantasy. Speaking of fantasy, let me ask you a philosophical question before we get to the final question. When you have managed your teams up to like the way you have 3 teams in the FFPC main event, I know you got some football guys teams pretty up high up there as well. When you have done that, do you make decisions any differently? Do you make waiver bids differently? Do you make lineup decisions differently? When you know, for those teams that are in contention, you do. Okay. So what's the difference, for you when are you getting more conservative or are you taking more chances with those teams?
No, I don't get conservative. You know, I don't look at matchups because in some of these tournaments, like football guys and main events, my philosophy is score points. And if you score points, you are in, because that's the thing you can control. You cannot control matchups or what your opponents do. And with lots of teams, I don't even look at, you know, sometimes who am I playing. But as the season progresses, Balki, what happens is in my adjustment, what I do is I first focus on the top teams more, do a bit more analysis around how I want to approach, and then I get through with the other teams, right? That's always how I look at. And the biggest thing I look for is week-to-week consistency. Like, I don't want players on my roster that I have to think about every week, right? Like, if you have a Deebo Samuel, Marquise Brown, you know, and players like that who you get at a later stage and they are consistent, I'm very happy because I don't want to tinker my roster. And the more I tinker my roster, I realize I keep the wrong player on the bench, right?
Yeah.
So that's how I approach. But what I do is, you know, if I have shares of some flex type players, like say a Jalen Waddle, right? I may not start Waddle in all my leagues, or I may not start a Michael Pittman in all my leagues. So sometimes I will hedge some of those options, but otherwise I don't tinker with my roster. I don't like tinkering with my lineups a lot, you know?
Yeah, no, and I'm just kind of like, for me, I will look at my roster Thursday afternoon, all my rosters, and I will only, you know, basically set the lineups I need to for players playing that night. And then I won't look at it till Sunday morning because I don't want to overthink it. Right. I don't want to, you know, think long, think wrong. I can't remember which player told me that, but it's always stuck with me.
And like, I'll tell you, I'll be in a bad situation this week, right? Like, I had Brandon Cooks in my lineup for last 2 weeks. Now, what do I do this week? I have Cortland Sutton on the bench and cooking there. So those are the decisions I hate making, Balki,
right?
Because I bench Cooks and then he takes off, right?
Yeah.
Anyways.
And you're right. I mean, it's just – and that was the irritating thing for me because I got Cooks so cheap – just talking about Brandon Cooks here for a second. I got Cooks so cheap in so many drafts and – you know, you look at what the Texans were doing to the Patriots offensively on Sunday, and I'm watching Red Zone, and it's like, oh, Chris Conley, and, you know, literally all these other Texans receivers, except for Brandon Cooks.
Yep.
It's just, and Davis Mills looked like Joe Montana out there. Like, what is going, but again, that is fantasy.
I was more thinking, this is my theory, and it may be totally false, but it feels good thinking about it. I was thinking Houston came to the game thinking Belichick will take away our number
That's
one
exactly guy. What I was That's about to say. Yep.
So let's just not have a game plan around him. I have this weird theory, you know.
And because, I mean, who is the most talented offensive player for Houston? It's Cooks, and it's not close. There's no running back there. There's no significant playmaking tight end. Cooks is the guy. So I guess, you know, it's one of those things we should have seen it coming, but you still, it's.
Yeah,
it's,
because one of my top 40 teams that cost me points, right? And I couldn't play Sutton because of his ankle issue.
Right.
And of course he takes off. You
know? Yeah. I mean, I wonder how many people that caught, because, like, you know, I'll look at that too, where if it's a close call and, you know, you have to wait for a round for Sutton to kind of figure out how his ankle's going to be, especially when it was a midweek injury. I mean, you got
I
no
don't like ankles and hamstrings, you know, and you know what? You play him everywhere and second snap, he's out. So, that's fantasy, I guess.
Yeah. No, you're right. Okay. Final question for you.
Yeah.
You're a bit blab. An early round pick, a player that a lot of people are counting on this week. You're in week 6, that you think actually might be better off on FFPC players' benches. And then a sleeper that will be on the benches for a lot of high stakes players that you think should be in starting lineups.
Yeah. So I don't know if a lot of people are counting on, you know, if you look at some of the early round starts, they're doing pretty well. You know, one player I always hate, and he was just in one main event team of mine because I had to do a contra, is Amari Cooper. I never believe in Amari Cooper. I feel he's ruined many of my championships and he vanishes when I need him, right? So Amari Cooper is a player, you know, I'm not high on, but that being said, I'm not going to bench him for sure this week. I would say Miles Sanders, you know, but I'm sure many teams may be also benching him. You know, Miles Sanders is someone I will probably be benching. You know, I don't like Thursday night players, short week, and then they are playing a very strong Tampa defense. Now, here is the curse. I'm benching Miles Sanders almost everywhere, so maybe he takes off. But yeah, it's Miles Sanders, right? And the other player I would say is to be cautious this week. I know I don't know if Julio Jones is playing, is AJ Brown. You know, they are playing a talented Bills defense, and I'm not sure if AJ Brown will do a lot this week, you know, but these are again cautions. Doesn't mean I will be benching them, you know, given where I've drafted. To that extent, DK Metcalf, you know, I don't know how the Seattle offense will look like this week. I know Geno looked good last game, but I don't know, you know, what Metcalf would do. So those are just cautions. But I am excited about some of my sleepers this week, you know, and they are mainly tight ends. So I feel if you look at some of the matchups of players like Mo Alie-Cox, Donald Parham, who scored a touchdown in last two games, Ricky Seals-Jones, these guys have a very fantasy favorable tight end matchup this week. And I feel they are sneaky sleepers, you know, because they are playing some of the worst tight end defenses and might find the red zone, right? So these will be some sleeper tight ends that I will use this week because of the injuries and the unavailability of some of the studs, right? So that's my sleepers.
Well, and a guy I wish I could say is a sleeper on this show, but you are no longer, my friend. Everybody knows. I saw when I put out the FFPC email this week, you got a lot of love on Twitter. Matt Schauff was chiming in. You had a bunch of guys talking, you know, congratulating you and let me be one of those guys, because you are a well-known guy, my friend, and you keep this up now, you're going to be even more well-known, because you got three really good chances here as we move forward, heading into week 6 in the FFPC main event, BitBlab Mandel, with three teams in the top 40 right now. Thank you so much for doing the show, man. I always enjoy talking shop with you, and we will do this again soon. I hope the ball bounces your way this weekend, and you know, maybe you get even further up that leaderboard, my friend.
Yeah, no, thanks, Balgi. And likewise, I know you can't play in FFPC, but you have lots of good teams and not everyone knows how well you do in those. I mean, you crush it at KFFS every year, right? And so I would encourage everyone even to ping you and get some of your ideas on their roster setups and whatnot. But I really appreciate, and hopefully this is the year where I win one of those big leagues at FFPC.
Oh, that would be tremendous. That would be tremendous. And we'll have you back on this podcast at a minimum, maybe the HSFF hour as well, dude.
Sure.
That would be tremendous. All right, dude, you be good. And we'll talk again real soon.
You too, Balgi. And it's a joy watching your son. You know, I think
he'll
make it big. He's coming.
You know, it's so funny. And I didn't get video of it. And, but he had his last flag football game of the season. He was playing sort of like a boundary corner position, and they don't throw a ton at that level. But 7-6 game late, and on third down and fourth down, they ran hard at him both times, and both times he got the flag, the stop inside the 10-yard line. It was and that was the season essentially. They ended up finishing the season 5-1. So I was very proud that he's doing it on both ends right now.
No, it's amazing. You know, I'm one of those few who get a chance to see those videos, but keep it up, Balgi.
Well, thank you. I will, and I will tell my son to do the same.
Thanks, Balgi.
All right, we'll talk to you later. You got it.
Cheers.
Thank you for listening to the High Stakes Lowdown, a RotoViz podcast brought to you by the Fantasy Football Players Championship. And thanks to Grapes for our theme music. Please review the podcast on iTunes under the RotoViz Radio feed. It helps us find new listeners. Contact us via email, rotovizradio@gmail.com. We'd love to hear what you think. And follow us on Twitter at RotoViz Radio. And remember, you can always support the show by subscribing to RotoViz at a 30% discount through the NFL podcast homepage, rotoviz.com/podcast.